Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or by going to veteransradio.net, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.net. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses in the government and commercial or corporate marketplace. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to nvbdc.org. We also want to thank Eisenhower Center. It's a brain injury recovery center, and in particular, it's after the impact program goes beyond awareness campaigns and state-of-the-art imaging to help veterans, first responders, and athletes. Learn more about EisenhowerCenter.com. They're located in Michigan and in Florida. And finally, we want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. And finally, we want to welcome a new sponsor to the program, which is Veterans Business Outreach Center, which is located in Flint, Michigan, and covers Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana. The center is ran and operated by veterans to help other veterans, National Guard, Reserve, spouses, expand and grow businesses. You can find more about them by going to vetbizcentral.org, 810-252-6200. And now on to our programs. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today John L. Call, Captain Call, retired from the Navy after about 26 years. Captain, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be here.
Well, we have you on because of your Navy service, but also because of your particular insights as a Navy chaplain. You are a Catholic priest. You were born in Wyandotte, Michigan, and did your preliminary education and preparation for the priesthood here in Metro Detroit area. And somewhere along the way, you talked somebody into letting you join the Navy. Not the normal path for any Catholic priest. Tell us a little bit about why a kid from Wyandotte, Michigan, and for those of you not familiar with Michigan around the world, or Wyandotte in particular, it sits on the water. So I'm sure you saw those big freighters go up and down, but why did a kid from Wyandotte want to end up in the Navy?
Well, that's a big part of it. Those ships just were, those were a fascination. There was a mystery about them. Where were they? Where are they going? That sort of thing. But the Navy is all my aunt's fault, actually. She worked at the Gros Isle Naval Air Station, long since disbanded. But she used to bring back these glossy recruiting magazines with just all these pictures of sailors doing what they do in far off places. And oh, I was hooked.
I had forgotten that there was a naval station down there on Gros Isle. That makes, that ties that together. I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Oh yeah, it's still there as a civilian airfield, but that's where it started.
And I guess you got a little extra boost on, boy, this would be an interesting career if I can figure out how to do it, when you were studying in Rome. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that was my aunt's fault, too. I wasn't studying there at that time. She sent me there on a vacation as a ordination gift. So essentially said, go to Rome, send me the bill. Well, I'd done some research, read books and stuff about the Navy. I knew the U.S. Navy's 6th Fleet Anchorage was down in Naples, just a 1-hour train ride from Rome. So I hopped the train, went down there, and this is where the lights really went on. I just, there was no doubt in my mind that this is what God wanted me to do. I find my way to the anchorage, and just out in the harbor in all her glory is sitting the USS Forrestal. Big old aircraft carrier, airplanes hanging out all over the place. I get down the pier as close as I can get. And I run in, how's this for Providence? Don't I meet up with the ship's Catholic chaplain?
What are the odds?
That's no accident in my mind. There was stuff going on there. He took me out to the ship, showed me around the place, and I was really hooked. I come back to Detroit, went straight to the Cardinal Dearden's office, and says, "You got to let me do this." And he was a kind man, very understanding, sympathetic. He says, "You're just ordained, John. Calm down. You got to do..." this is apparently, I didn't know at the time, it's an arrangement with the priests through the Catholic Conference of the United States. You've got to do 7 years as a priest in parish work in your diocese before your ordinary will or can let you go to the military. So that was the deal. He said, "Yeah, you do 2 assignments, 7 years here, and I'll let you go." And that's pretty well how it happened, except that he up and died in the midst of that. And I had to have the same conversation with Cardinal Shoka. But 1982, off I went.
So you joined up in 1982 to the and U.S. Navy and off to the chaplain school. For those who don't know, the Army Chaplain Corps is one of the oldest and smallest branches of the Army. That Chaplain Corps actually dates itself back to July of 1775, when the Continental Congress authorized one chaplain for each regiment of the Continental Army. So really, the chaplain corps is older than the country itself.
Oh, indeed.
Well, let's start with your history with the chaplain corps. So you go to school first. What's the process here to get some duty assignments, and tell us about those assignments?
Okay, it's chaplain school was not arduous duty. We were out in Newport, Rhode Island, in August of 82. A bunch of chaplain candidates and also medics, doctors, and corpsmen, they put all in the same school, trying to teach us how to march and who to salute and how you get your uniforms and how you wear them and all that stuff. And then I got my first orders were to the Portsmouth Naval Hospital in Virginia, just outside of Norfolk. It's the big Navy base. on the East Coast, and that was the medical facility that served the sailors. I was there for 2 years with an awesome Irish priest, Dennis Casey, a foreign-born Irishman. It was just a wonderful model for me trying to figure out what ministry in this new vineyard was like.
And did you have the
only there for 2 years?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Did you have sort of the typical military rotation where they move you every few years?
3 years is normal. It seems that hospital ministry in the military is very stressful stuff. So they try to move you a little sooner. 2 years is more the norm for hospital work. And that's what they did with me. They also want to give new chaplains a variety of experiences and kind of show them the many different sorts of ministry that the Navy has to offer, so that you can, as you get more senior, you might become more specialized in one or the other. A lot of people don't know that we supply chaplains to the Coast Guard, and also the Marine Corps gets its chaplain corps, as well as doctors and corpsmen from the Navy. All the Marines are trigger pullers. All their support. They don't like to be reminded of that. comes from the Navy.
Well, you guys are just taxi drivers. You just drive them places on those big ships. But let me move you from Norfolk. Walk us through your next couple of duty assignments over this 26-year history.
From the hospital, I went to Okinawa with the Marine Corps for just a year, and I was supposed to stay longer than that, but the detailer, the guy who makes assignments, wanted me to get into this exchange program with the Brits and the Royal Navy. So they pulled me out of that, and I lived in Portsmouth, England, for 2 years. The exchange program is something like 50 or so Navy people of all descriptions, ship drivers, plane drivers, mechanics, doctors, chaplains, medics, all of that, just trade jobs with their counterparts in the Royal Navy. So I lived over there for 2 years at a hospital. That was terrific. Went from there back home to Groton, Connecticut, and a submarine group. This is kind of neat for the Catholic side of the house. There's an admiral there who insisted on having a Catholic priest on his staff. Normally, we didn't put the priest as junior as me. I'm just a lieutenant commander now. Normally, it's all captains on an admiral's staff. But he wanted a priest, and I was available coming off the exchange program. So they put me on his staff in Groton. I was there 2.5 years. Admiral Hooley was a serious Catholic, daily mass goer, along with his wife, Judy, wonderful people. So there's that kind of demand for Catholic priests among the hierarchy is just very, very heartwarming, uplifting. Went from there to my first aircraft carrier, the John F. Kennedy, and we immediately went off to Desert Shield, Desert Storm in 1991. A wonderful place for a priest. to be, again, some very important Catholic believing officers on that ship. 8 out of the 10 squadron commanders on the ship, and it's 70 aircraft, were engaged church-going Catholic people. That kind of leadership, along with the captain, who was Eastern Orthodox, you can't beat that kind of leadership to reinforce your ministry.
Well, in something like 25% of the military designate as or identify as Catholic, but certainly it's the chaplain corps and the military itself has all kinds of folks, including those who are non-denominational or atheists. But the chaplain corps has Protestants and Jewish rabbis and Muslim Islams and Buddhists. So I suspect over time in these various assignments, you get to interact with all types of different chaplains. Father Call.
Yeah, we live an ecumenical ministry all the time. It's real. It's authentic. We enjoy each other's company. We eat meals together. Our beliefs may be different one to another, and our religious practices as well. But we appreciate each other's ministry and our service. And if you cannot live that way, you don't last long in the service. You're found out pretty quick, and you don't make rank, and you go home to find some other vineyard to minister in. You've got to be open-minded and tolerant and accepting and willing to learn about each other's beliefs and practices. And I don't know an institution on the planet that does that better than the United States military.
Because, and I guess I want to make sure that folks understand that when you're a chaplain, you minister to everybody who's there, right?
Good point.
Could you elaborate on sort of, and I saw a quote that I'll come back to you on, but it says, you're quoted as saying, quote, in the military, a priest goes to where the people are, close quote. But talk about who you minister to and the type of ministry.
Well, you're right. It's essentially the missionary model. We go out. We don't have office. Well, we do have an office, but we don't wait for them to come to us. We are out and about with everybody, living the Navy life. That goes a long way, especially with the Marines. If you're out living in the mud with them and running with your pack with them, you become one of the pack, as they say. We've had, giving an example, the bombing of the USS Cole. They don't. Destroyer like that doesn't normally have a chaplain assigned to it, but they were operating in the 7th Fleet area, and one of the, we call them circuit riders, who just goes around from ship to ship, had spent a couple of weeks with the Cole and gotten off just before the bomb went off, and went off to do something else. Well, the Admiralty in 7th Fleet tried to send them a couple chaplains from the admiral's staff. The Cole wouldn't let them on the ship. They wanted nothing to do with them. They didn't know these people. They weren't about to come aboard and get deep down and personal with them. You got to be part of the pack. They wanted that guy who would, Protestant chaplain, who had spent two weeks with them at sea. He was up in the Mediterranean at the time, but the Navy jumped through all kinds of hoops to get him down there because he was the only chaplain they were willing to set foot on the ship. You get that kind of relationship with the people you're ministering to, it just pays dividends over and over and over again.
So you spent, I think it's 26 years in the service, and at some point in this process, and we've just sort of outlined maybe about 8 or 10 years or more of that service, you have to be asking yourself, or others are asking you, why are you staying? And what was going on in your mind? There's every career man or woman hits that point where they got to say it's time to stay or time to go. There are things on the outside world I maybe got to go do. What were you thinking about as you were making that? This is I'm staying for the career decision.
That's difficult. There was never a point that I could identify where I decided I'm going to just go to the end. I kept getting promoted. I'm getting more senior. I'm getting more fascinating jobs where I've got some authority and I can do some things. I can mentor some people. I can and teach the chaplains coming up behind me, and I enjoyed that very much.
I know you really enjoyed your time with the Marines. Now, I've had a chance to have some meals with Father Call, and while he's a Navy chaplain, he's always defending the honor of the Marines. And I think maybe did you close out your career at Camp Lejeune before retirement? Was that the last duty assignment?
I almost did. I had two assignments there on two different general staffs, the 2nd Division and then the 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force. Again, I got the first job as that other one I mentioned because Admiral Buck Emile Bedard, a French Catholic, demanded a Catholic priest on his staff. And I happened to be, see if I can make a short story long. I was at Bethesda Naval Hospital at the time, the day my name showed up on the captain's promotion list. Father Fred Elkin, that afternoon, he was the detailer, calls me and says, "John, how fast can you get to Camp Lejeune?" This general was jumping up and down and throwing things about why he didn't have his Catholic priest yet. So as soon as I got senior enough to qualify for the job, they sent me off there. And two months later, I'm in the deserts of Turkey with a battalion of the 2nd Marine Division. It was sensational.
Well, that's how you have to look at these opportunities that just sort of arise, is go, well, I wasn't expecting this, but isn't this interesting?
Yeah.
Well, I want to cover a couple of more things. We could obviously talk the whole time just on these interesting career opportunities in the Chaplain Corps, but let me speed forward a little bit. You retire from active duty in 2008. You stay on as a civilian contractor priest until 2011, and then you spend a number of years on the staff of the archbishop, who's in charge of the archdiocese for the military services. And ultimately, by about 2017, you said, "Okay, I've done my service here. I'm heading back to the Metro Detroit area." I sped that up because I want you to talk about, and I don't think today many people realize that the Chaplain Corps isn't as robustly staffed as may be needed with all the deployments and the up-tempo and the use of contract chaplains. Can you talk to us a little bit about that aspect?
Sure. When I joined the Navy in 1982, the Navy had 220 priests. Today, this morning, we have 39. So in the course of that time, like every other diocese, the Navy has taken its hits in terms of the dearth of priests. So what the Navy did with that, I mean, they have a constitutional obligation to provide for the free exercise of religion for their people. So this is something they have got to take care of this, address it somehow. So they started offering civilian contracts to retired priests. Well, not necessarily retired priests, but those were the only ones we could get, or who the respective bishops would let go to cover the bases in the United States, so that the priests that we have could be sent to the Marine Corps, to the ships at sea, and to bases overseas. And that's where all our active duty priests are today. There are none in the continental United States.
And that's sort of one of those things I think is a little shocking, not only the drop that the Navy's seen, which I guess you can say, well, that's normal because of just the lack of priests in general, but this idea that if you're a Navy chaplain, you're deployed. You're not sitting, you're not sitting somewhere, you're deployed. So that makes it even maybe more difficult for somebody to make the commitment to be active duty or be a reserve chaplain and be committed to that mission. And as you say, the vineyards, which are overseas or on ships.
Well, this current situation is what makes those deployments even more difficult. There used to be a planned ebb and flow to these things. You could go deploy like I did on the Kennedy for 2 years. I was on the ship, but I came back and was pastor of the Norfolk Parish for two years. So you were at sea, you come home. You go with the Marines, you come home. There's that coming going sort of thing that now is impossible. You're deployed. You go to the Marines, you go to a ship, you go to a base overseas, usually Europe. There's no going home except for leave time. So we're like many dioceses now, we're burning out the priests that we've got.
Turn to these civilian contractors and to fill the gap. And then part of the reason Father Call and I are talking, because the Navy recently stepped in it, and it made national news. And I said, hey, Captain, you got to come on and put this into context. Because in the beginning of September 2020, the Navy canceled the Catholic masses at San Diego bases, continuing other services on base, but essentially saying, hey, go out into the community, go out into the local economy and find your religious services out there somewhat. So explain this controversy and the outcome of it as it brewed for about a month.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't, fortunately, it wasn't the Navy, big Navy, that decided to do this. It was just the region of the Navy Southwest. It encompasses most of the California bases and certainly San Diego, a very, very large naval base with a huge Catholic population and a large Catholic congregation at three different chapels, all served by a contract priest who now was just going to be let go. This was a decision of an admiral who, in my opinion out there, got way ahead of his headlights. He didn't seem to think Big Navy would be interested, or the Department of Defense wouldn't come down on top of him. Bad, bad idea. Not thought out, not staffed, and he ended up having to back off of it.
And this all played out in the Military Times and national papers. Yeah. And this is not anybody who's served knows if you're on the front page of the paper, it's not good for your career. So we'll just leave that hanging there. But let me ask you to comment about who I believe is a friend of yours, and that's the Archbishop of the Archdiocese for the Military Services. And this will sort of bring us to an end, but I think it's important for you to, with your unique experience, because you were on his staff for a number of years, talk about the Archbishop and talk about this particular Archdiocese.
Archbishop Timothy Broglio, like the priests that he shepherds, is borrowed from someplace else. He was from he was a priest, a bishop from Cleveland, who spent most of his time doing diplomatic work for the Secretary of State office in the Vatican. He speaks five languages fluently, and I suppose they thought, with all the traveling involved and keeping up with the troops that he does, that language skill would certainly be of use. And I've served now for, I believe, four different military archbishops. And there is none who has been more on the road than he has. Without fail, Christmas and Easter, Thanksgiving times, you can find him where the conflicts are. He's in Kuwait, he's in Afghanistan, he's in Iraq, and stops other places while getting to and from there. The office has a heck of a time keeping track of him. His poor secretary, he is literally gone two-thirds of the time. He's just not in the office.
Well, again, from a military perspective, you want your general, you want your commander out with the troops, and it's clear that he's taken that message to heart, hasn't he?
Exactly. He models the military ministry as well as anybody without any military experience himself. And that originally concerned us when he came aboard, but right away he was smart enough to surround himself on the staff with a priest from the Air Force, a priest from the Navy, a priest from the Army, who could keep him from making huge mistakes.
There's another parallel I want to draw, which is, you know, the military services have troubles at time recruiting, certainly recruiting a diverse population, and we have a lot of talk about the great opportunities the service can provide to certain citizens of the United States if they get in there and seize them. And I wonder, you know, they're always working at what different recruiting approaches in different communities. And I wonder, how do you solve the chaplain problem from a recruiting end in light of what's going on in different communities? Is there an answer to the Catholic priest shortage in the military, in the Navy in particular, with those shocking numbers?
We don't have a seminary. We don't make our own priests, the military. We borrow everybody else's. We depend on the good-hearted generosity of archbishops and bishops in the United States to loan us their priests. Most of them are very happy to do that. There are others who are just strictly against the military and don't even want to hear about it. So we leave them alone. We have a vocations director on the Archbishop's staff who is constantly in touch with the clergy offices of the diocese, encouraging young people to think about the military as at least part of their priestly service. They don't need to think of it as a career necessarily. You can go in for 3 years, 6 years, come home, and that way the Archbishop is not concerned about losing you entirely for the rest of your priestly career and retiring from active duty, and he never sees you again. That is one of their principal concerns in loaning priests to the military archdiocese. So we are totally dependent on their goodwill, and with the demand for priests being what it is in the diocese, it's very difficult for them to just offer up another one.
Sure.
When they have priests, we have parishes with no priests.
Yeah, no, this is a wider shortage of religious men and women. Captain Call, I appreciate you taking. I kept you longer than I said I would. We didn't cover all the ground I hoped we had, but you know, it's an interesting perspective, and I think one that will hopefully help others understand what it is chaplains do and what it is Catholic priests do, and the kind of careers that they might have in the military, and the importance and the value of it. You pointed out it's a sort of a it not only is down to the soldier, sailor, marine level, that one-on-one, but this larger constitutional issue to make sure that they can exercise their free right to religion as well when in service. And so I think it's something we should all think about to make sure that we have the military that we want to have, one that can be grounded in God and country and ethics and get counseling and get help when it's needed. And all of those things are part of what you deliver as a chaplain over the 26-year career. So thank you for your service, Captain, and thank you for spending some time with Veterans Radio today.
Thanks very much, Jim. I enjoyed it.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans. And you can reach us at 800-693-4800
or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Veterans Radio needs you. If you like our shows that are informative, surprising stories, and relevant information on what's happening at the VA and the military, we'd like your support. Individual support of $5 to $50 a month or corporate sponsorship of $1,000 to $10,000 would be welcomed. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsorship or support tab, pay online, and keep Veterans Radio on the air.